A warning to listeners. This episode contains railway layout discussion and interest in trains. Listener discretion is advised. Hello and welcome back.
Thanks for joining us for another episode.
I am Malcolm Childs.
And I'm James Skiffins, and we are Just Making Conversation,
where we discuss the ins and outs of the model-making hobby that brings us joy and pain in equal measure.
From the greasy sprues and those gloss coats, and everything in between, we're going to Just Make Conversation. Remember, there are other podcasts you can listen to.
The Plastic Model Mojo.
The Scale Model Podcast.
The Plastic Posse Podcast.
On the Bench.
The Model Geeks.
The Sprue Cutters Union.
The Small Subjects.
Built Sideways.
And Model by Garpone. Micro Machines Podcast.
Head to modelpodcast.com for all the links. But do remember, not all the podcasts that are out there are on that link.
Share the love. If you enjoyed this episode, please put that down, because it's part of the algorithm.
Showing your support to us is as easy as making a cup of coffee. In fact, why not go over to buymeacoffee.com /JMC podcast and do just that. Your support will help go towards making this podcast and its content just that little bit better. In this episode, we'll be just making conversation about those frequently asked questions, those general questions from interested parties when they see your prize models.
The public and friends showing a genuine interest in your pride and joy is always a wonderful thing. But the questions are already quite often the same ones you'll hear over and over and over again.
When you're showing your work at a museum where there are a lot of public non-modellers, or maybe when guests are at your home looking at your finished work, it's clear that there are some misconceptions and a lack of general understanding about the hobby. Yeah. Almost come out as one sentence. We're going to hit the comments straight away. We have had comments from lots of people this week. Thank you so much for all your very positive interaction over our first of interviews. Very happy we did it. Great subject and really great guests. So on Instagram, we had DVD Connoisseur, who said, always an excellent listening experience. Thank you for that. Underneath the link in the Facebook page were a few comments from the following people. Robert Lane was our first one. He said, another excellent episode on an issue that too many in the hobby think is irrelevant. The discussions were insightful and was good to hear different viewpoints. Thank you for grasping the nettle on this subject. You're most welcome.
Grasping the nettle is right, because we were certainly worried about it being a prickly subject.
Oh, God, yes. We were very, very nervous. In fact, I can honestly tell you, we were probably as nervous as our guests. Mm-hmm. It was a great chat, and I think we could have carried on chatting for a lot longer than we did.
We could have made a whole another podcast out of that. It was heavily edited, to be honest. We'll have to get them back to chat to them about something else.
Yes. Tom Hayward was up next in the comment, and he said, we'll need to give this a listen. I've seen a number of women being driven away from Facebook scale modelling groups after posting their builds, as they get inundated with over-familiar replies or sending them private messages and crossing the line. Oh, God. He says, I'm sure the blokey atmosphere of a lot of modelling groups doesn't help, where the 1970s jokes about the wife are still the height of comedy.
That is true.
Yeah.
And we are very, very guilty of that. The amount of dick jokes and stuff that we do. We've got better, though. Yeah, we've grown.
Well,
get it?
I got it. Anyway, moving on. Next up was John Marley with his comment, and he said a good topic and one of the best aired. I've read some appalling comments from some blokes on forums. Yeah, I think we all have to a degree. We are recording this quite hot off the press from our last release, so keep the comments coming, and we will reflect on them on our next one.
Generally, though, people have chatted to me over Messenger and things like that, and I've not read them out on here because, you know, I haven't asked them permission to use their name and all that sort of thing. But people are happy that we have approached the subject, and I've had a lot of positive comments from people that that know the two people we interviewed as well. So that's been good. I guess if you see anything you don't like, call it out is the thing. But yeah, really good. Look out for more interviews.
Yes, we've been busy in the background throwing ideas at each other, as well as bin bags and fruit and stuff. On this episode, we are going to talk about frequently asked questions. We're going to do a Moosaroo update at some point, so stay tuned.
And a Telford update.
Yeah, don't want to spoil them with too much information.
No, we do. We don't want to hold any information back at all. All information should be out there. Hold nothing back.
Indeed. Frequently asked questions. One of the reasons this topic has come up is because you experienced these very same things at a show you were at just recently.
It was the Armed Forces Fair in March. Not in March, the month, in March, the town, which is up in the Cambridgeshire area, up in the Fens in the UK. I was there with a very good friend, and we sat there. We were showing models off to the general public. I noticed that the same questions and comments, and you know, and by the end of the day, I was like, oh, what's this person going to ask? Oh, they'll ask the same question again. This is my answer. And I was getting quite bored and frustrated with that. And I just kind of wanted to reflect on that, really, and talk about it. So there's the difference between the two. A public show and a modeler's show is the do not touch signs.
Mm-hmm.
At a public show, you have to make sure you've got do not touch signs all the way around, barbed wire, lights, and you've got to be willing to leap in there in case someone reaches for your stuff. Not so much at modelling shows, I don't think.
No, there is a sort of an unwritten rule not to touch things, isn't there, at a model show with modellers?
Yeah, I guess so. Yes, yeah, you don't touch anyone else's junk. That's basically it. But yeah, constantly we were having to leap forward and shout no a couple of times, upsetting young children that will probably mark them for life and never ever get into the hobby. Every time they see a Spitfire, they'll be like, "Oh, that big man's showered at me." But yeah, just to save the model, and one got picked up, a Tornado that I was showing got picked up by a young child. And I don't know, my modelling life flashed before my eyes, let's say. It's a thing, isn't it? You know, you don't want to have a balance, don't you? You want to have a balance between being able to see it, but also not so much being able to reach for it. Sometimes the parents are good, sometimes they're not, sometimes the parents are worse.
Oh yeah, definitely. I know there is one particular model group that I can think of. Can't think of the name of them. I remember at Shuttleworth this year, March sort of time. Not March in Cambridge, March in the month. yeah, there was one particular display group there that had all their models, but they had Perspex barrier at the edge of their table, all the way around the table, as a constant reminder not to put your dippy paws in. The really weird thing about that is that was the only table I saw anyone trying to put the dippy paws in. Didn't do it on any other.
Oh, encouraged it. Was it a challenge?
Well, I think psychologically maybe it was. Maybe people saw it as a way of, well, you're inviting it, really, because, you know, you put a barrier there. I must put my hand or my camera much more closer to the model than I normally would because there's a barrier.
Ah.
I don't know.
Do they have, like, armholes like you get in shops now in the UK? Like the bank teller, they have a little opening to put your money in and things like that.
That's a good thing as well, given the fact that COVID is not quite as prevalent as it was, and the security barriers that have been up in shops and stuff. There's a lot of Perspex flying around, which could be picked up for almost nothing. Look in shop bins. They've thrown away all their barriers, and they won't keep them. They'll disappear. I do have some rather large barriers at work that I'm keeping my eye on. They may actually have to disappear. Anyway, gone off the topic a little bit. But isn't it strange? I mean, we had a fate near where I live, but I noticed exactly the same thing. Your little lady there selling her marmalade and a little stall selling muffins and all that sort of thing. And the children of all ages, they all were very touchy-feely. That, you know, we got, oh, look, there's a cupcake. Can I pick that? No. Don't Don't pick the cupcake up unless you're buying it.
Put it back. It's too late now. Put the sticky mitts all over it.
Yeah, maybe that was the idea. I can get this free now because it's got fingerprints in it.
Oh, it's dropped on the floor. Oh, it's all dirty. Wipe it off.
But yeah, so what were some of the questions in which you were asked? Because, you know, obviously you intimated that after a period of time, the repetitiveness was not good.
I made a list. That's how bad it got. So the main one, I would say, was how long did that take you to make?
Mm-hmm.
Which is an interesting question in itself as to why would someone want to know how long it took you. I guess scale modeling is seen as a hobby that takes a long time to make things. It's seen as a quiet, reclusive hobby that requires a lot of concentration. That's true. But the fact that someone thinks it's going to take a very long time or doesn't think it's going to take a very long time.
I would argue with you that perception from the general non-modeler would be that you sit down in an afternoon and you throw something together. But looking at, let's say, a diorama, for example, you look at the diorama, you think to yourself, well, in my mind's eye, it's a weekend's work, but I'm sure it might be two weekends, but I'm not sure. Like, I'll ask the question. And then when you reply, oh, yeah, it took me 3 months, 7 days, 15 hours and 25 seconds, their mouth drops to the floor and goes, oh, my God, I didn't realize it would take that long.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do a round of golf in an hour.
Screw that for a hobby. I'm going to go play tennis. Yeah, go play archery. It's quicker. I don't know whether it's a compliment when they ask the question, whether they see it and think they must have taken you a long time. How long did it take you? Or whether they see it and go, God, that's terrible. How long do you waste your time on that? I don't know.
I think it's a compliment thing because I know I've had times where people have asked me that same question, strangely.
Yeah.
And you say, well, I'll be honest, I don't really know because I didn't set a timer.
No, that's right.
Or I didn't write down how many hours it took me, but I would guess maybe it took me, like I said, let's say 3 months. And like, really? That long? You're like,
yeah,
it's not a quick process.
Nope. Nope. That's right. And it always shocked when you say. And I guess if you're not counting the hours and if you're not writing them down for tax reasons, then you're not gonna know.
No.
You might think, well, I bought the kit in 1986 and then I looked at it in 1990. I washed the sprues back in 2001 and then I opened the kit recently.
Now, that would be a great response, wouldn't it? When someone says to you next, how long did that take you to make? And you said, well, 27 years, 4 months. What? Oh, yeah, no, I bought it back in 1987 and it didn't come out of my stash until such and such. Mm. Yeah, that would be a much longer answer.
Yes, it would. Imagine if you did. Imagine if you knew that.
I think the glaze in people's eyes would come down a lot quicker.
Well, you say, hang on a minute, let me just open my ScaleMates account, load up my spreadsheets.
Yeah, yeah.
Would you like to know where I purchased the kit? Yeah, but no, it's interesting because they're always shocked when you tell them. You say, oh, it's probably around 100 hours work. You know, it's, wow, really? That's a long time.
Do you see their shocked face and it's a case of trying to read their mind? It would be a case of in their mind they're saying, well, I don't really know what to ask now. It seems to be a conversation killer. Once you give the answer, they're like, oh, wow, oh, okay.
Perhaps, yeah. When they realize that you are that boring and will sit for 28 hours
or obsessed
in front of a model. I think that's possibly the thing, because that kind of draws me onto the other questions that I get or have witnessed. Well, there's quite a few. Did you make that yourself?
Mm-hmm.
I guess, I don't know if it happens to you, but every time someone comes up and asks that, you know, wants to know something specific about that model, did you make that? And it's always, no, I didn't make that one. That one over there is mine, but you're not interested in that one. You want to know about this one. And the bloke's just gone out to get a cup of tea and he will be another hour and a half. Or they ask you what kit it is, or they ask you, you know, how long did it take them to make it? And you just can't answer it because it's not bloody there.
When you're on a table and you're displaying with a group of other modelers, I have had that question, those two questions, when I have entered models into competitions. And one particular model, I was quite fascinated in people's reactions and stuff. Mm. I'd won an award, so, you know, that's very nice.
Oh, there you go. Ding. Go take a drink, everyone.
Yeah, we stopped the bingo thing now.
Oh, yeah, didn't do that. Yeah, it's season one, wasn't it?
But it was really interesting to have that conversation. Don't get me wrong, I had that conversation with probably half a dozen people, but it was really interesting to hear people's thought process on it and how they interpreted the piece of work.
But these were actual modellers that were discussing it, weren't they?
Yeah, that's the difference between public and model shows.
Yeah.
Although there are some public people in those model shows too.
Of course. Sometimes.
Yeah, there was sort of a general understanding. But don't you find it strange, though, going briefly back to that, how long did that take you to do? Uh-huh. Have you experienced having that question from other model makers?
No.
Have you not? Oh, I have. Yeah. And I find that really bizarre because it's like, well, do you make models? Yeah. That's my model there. Oh, okay.
That's why, I would find that bizarre too.
It wouldn't be the question I ask. I wouldn't say to someone, oh my God, look at that. That's amazing. How long did that take you to make?
I'd probably say, like, how long did it take you to do the photo etch? Or, you know, did you get stuck on anything? I don't think I would say, how long did it take you? Because it's a very difficult question to answer as a modeler. But I might ask, how long did that take you to dry? It's enamels. Oh, you made it with oils. How long did that take you to dry?
Yeah.
But I don't think I'd ever ask. I mean, no one ever asked me how long it takes to edit Just Making Conversation.
No. They don't.
Oh, they never asked. They're not interested.
How many people do you have wandering through the studio while you're doing the editing?
Well, hopefully zero.
Mm.
But, you know, just out and about, no one asks.
Yeah. It's strange, isn't it? Like I say, it is one of those questions. And it seems to be almost an awkward question of I want to ask a question and I am interested, but I'm not quite sure what to ask. So I'll ask that question. Yeah. And now I've got the answer. I don't really know how to follow it up.
Well, the other one is that a Chinook? Is that a Red Arrow?
Mm.
Is that a something or other? I know that some model clubs will ask their members to create a little placard of the model that's on display, which requires a little bit of a forethought and planning, which is probably why I never bothered.
Uh-huh.
They will have a little placard that says who made it, what it is, what scale it is, what kits it's from, you know, a little explanation about it, which I like. So I like the idea, but it doesn't encourage conversation.
No.
Which was going to be kind of the conclusion that I was going to make about this whole podcast. So I've kind of come early. No.
You've peaked early.
It's a bit premature of me, is what I was going to say.
Okay, well, yeah, it would be.
So people are asking you questions. They want to talk to you about it. Perhaps they just don't know what to ask. So if someone says, how long did that take you? Or asks you one of these other questions that is inane and samey.
Mm.
Just start blabbing and tell them everything about the model.
Mm.
You know, ask them about their hobby, whether they make it and why you make it. Because that's the question.
Mm.
It's why did you make that? Why is that shown?
I think you've hit the nail on the head there, really, is that those sort of frequently asked questions are an awkward opener to a potential conversation. And the fact that they've stopped and want to ask that question is the opportunity to continue the inspiration that you may have created from your model piece that just made them stop and want to talk.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I'm going to be really mean now, but I remember going to model railway shows.
It's not like you.
And walking around I did it with my father. It's something my father enjoys, and I'd take him out for the day and we'd go and do a model or train show. But also I found it fascinating because there were always things there that I can see would transpose into my own hobby, although I'm not a model railer. But most times you go around the club parts where people are showing off their engines and trucks, but they are completely disengaged. 9 times out of 10, they're sat there either reading a book, and even to the point I remember going around a particular show at Alexander Palace in London, and coming across a work colleague he's not the most chattiest person in the world, I'll grant him that, but he even didn't even have the opportunity to acknowledge anybody as they were looking at the stuff in front of him.
Right.
He just was totally disengaged. which I thought was a real shame. You don't see that so much at model shows, if I'm honest. 9 times out of 10, the modelers, if anything, are talking amongst themselves.
Yeah, and that makes sense, doesn't it?
Which loses that possible connection as someone wanders by.
Yeah, I agree.
But let's say Telford, for example, because no doubt that's hot on everybody's mind right now.
Hot.
Telford is a great example. As you walk around the Stig tables.
Sig.
No, Stig. I like Stig.
Sig.
The special interest groups. There's always people standing there talking. Always. You don't have a constant movement of people just going, that's nice, that's nice, that's nice. Maybe at the public shows, like we were discussing earlier, it's not quite the same. Everyone's sort of mulling around.
I think they want to go to the next thing at public shows.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, entertain me. And just talking about placards, I think that kind of it discourages conversation, is what I was going to say. Yes, it tells you what it is. Yes, it tells you who made it. And yes, it tells you what scale it's in. But it doesn't tell you the whole story. And the only way you're going to find that out is about talking to the modeler and asking direct questions. Maybe they should start putting things like, this took 18 hours.
That'd be quite funny to see.
Order them by length of time.
Yes. Wow. Could you imagine that? That would be so funny. Because when someone says, how long did that take? Well, this is a medium time span. But if you walk up this end of the table, this is where it gets a little bit longer.
Or you could have SIG dedicated to builds that take longer than 10 hours to make or something.
Uh-huh.
Thank you, hon.
So other frequently asked questions.
Yeah. How much is it? How much does that cost? How much are you selling this for?
If you made one for me, how much would it cost me?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's usually comes up with a shocked face as well when you...
Oh, yes.
You have to tot up the amount of hours that it took and the amount of cost of the kit, my special skills that it took me a lifetime to create, you know, the paint and everything else. It's kind of negligible. When you say, a model of this quality will probably cost you around £550, you can see them just turn around and walk off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry, I just realised that my bacon sandwich is waiting. I got to go. Why? Oh, look, my daughter's about to grab something on that table. I must go.
Oh, yeah, I left my gas on. But, I mean, honestly, you know, you tot up the amount of hours something does take, then, yeah, it's going to be a lot of money.
Well, this is it, isn't it? I mean, I lost count of the amount of conversations I've had with people where they've said, so-and-so's asked me if I can do a commission build. And I'm like, oh, okay. Mm. And in fact, to be honest, those that do commission builds or commission painting, that was something that I noticed when I went to that one and only Warhammer. God, when was that?
Selwick.
Yeah.
That was almost a year ago because Selwick is coming up again.
And that was spoken about quite a lot in that show, about, if I could get someone to paint that, how much do you think it would cost?
That's it. Wargamers don't want to paint, generally, their own armies. They want someone to paint them, and then they can go and actually do the fun bit and play with them.
That's right. There's another commonly asked question, depending on the show you're at.
Yeah.
In that scenario, where you're talking about a model that's been made or something's been painted, have you ever heard the response when you say, it's £550 that would cost? And the person goes, how much does the kit cost? That's not really relevant.
Yeah.
It's because it's involved in the 550 quid. I've just quoted you to do it if you want it.
Yeah. Is it worth my time to not do my hobby and do the things I want to do and stop and build something for you? You're going to have to pay through the nose for it. Thanks.
But it's only a £20 kit.
It's only a little figure.
Yeah.
I remember being at a show in Plymouth, and there was a chap, and he was showing his figures. The chap I was with, a friend of mine, he wasn't a modeler, but he was really interested in all these things. I was fascinated by him. And he came in, and he said, this is beautiful. And it was a Grenadier Guard. And he was saying, how much is that? That red must have taken you ages, you know, asking all these kind of questions. Then he said, how much would it cost to have one of those? Because I could imagine him wanting to put it on his mantelpiece or put it on his bedside table or...
Mm-hmm.
Put it in his bedside drawer. That's something else. And the guy went, it didn't take long to think. He made about £300. And the chap I was with was shocked and kind of offended that it would be that much money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the guy had to remind him that this He had been making models since, you know, for 50 years, and the skills that he had takes that long to build up. So why the hell wouldn't he charge a lot of money for his art, his techniques, and his skill? He's got a point, you know? I mean, he wasn't selling them.
No, he's got a good point. He's got a good point. When you think of, you know, I've got a leaky tap, can you come around and fix it? Well, it's 150 quid, come look at it. And he turns the tap off and says, yeah, you just got to tighten it. See you later.
Yeah, I got a special spanner.
Yeah.
I had to go to special school to learn how to use.
Yeah.
It was tough shit. I've turned up.
But most people wouldn't bat an eyelid.
No.
An engineer coming out to look at your fridge freezer that isn't working very well. And he comes out and says, well, yeah, I'll come out, but it's 150 quid to start with before I walk across the threshold. And then turns around and says, well, I haven't got the parts on the van. I'll have to come back. And he's only there 10 minutes. And you're like, well, it's 150 quid for you just to go, yeah, it's not working. I knew that before you came in.
Yeah, that's a bit of minimum, doesn't it, for him actually to get out of bed.
Yeah, yeah.
Usually people are quite shocked, I find, especially if they have no idea about the cost of these things.
Mm. And also you touched upon the fact that people are offended.
Yeah.
Now, that is a real thing, especially when it comes to commission work. The amount of times I've heard where people have said they've got a commission job, and then once the job's finished, when it comes to payment, they're like, well, no, I think you're overcharging. I'm not paying that.
Oh, God. You've got to talk about payment before you even lift a brush, surely.
Well, you've got to take the money before. I can't see any other way of doing it.
Half now, half then or something like that?
Well, I don't know, but I don't think it's unreasonable to say to someone, I want you to make this model look amazing. I'll pay you up front and then it's done, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think people would probably loathe to do that because you're paying for something you haven't physically got yet.
Yeah.
But I think if you're serious about it, I think you would actually say, well, yeah, I'll pay you the money up front. I don't want to pay you a deposit, but I'll pay you money up front, but I want a written contract that you're going to supply it, because if you don't, then I can get the money back. Or at least pay it through a means in which you can claim the money back because you haven't got the goods in which you ordered effectively.
Well, that's, I guess, the halfway thing, isn't it? That's, if you have building work, you pay at half up front or a large deposit. Oh. And then on completion, when you're both parties are happy, then you complete the full transaction. Interestingly, I haven't told you this, actually. I commissioned somebody to make a model for me.
Oh.
5 years ago.
Oh, wow.
I won't mention the names. Because I had an idea for a model and I wanted some extra bits for it, and they don't exist. So I'd have to scratch build myself. 5 years ago, that sounded like a daunting task for me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'll be straight on it. Fine, build it from scratch, no problem. But contacted a chap who built something similar and said, do you have this? Do you have any ideas if you're going to be building this in the future? Is it going to become a mold or whatever? And the guy said that he had plans to build this particular vehicle, but didn't find that there was much interest in it in that particular scale.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, you send me 50 quid, I'll get on it. I'll start working on it. And then once it's done, I'll send you one. I thought, oh, okay. And I thought, oh, 50 quid to me is a lot of money.
Yeah.
But he knew exactly what he was talking about. He knew the vehicle. He wanted photographs, and I sent him all those. And I sent him 50 quid.
Uh-huh.
Do it. And I heard from him a couple of times, and then nothing. Didn't hear anything at all. And I just kind of left it because I thought, well, you know, guys, if I ring him up and ask him where it is, he's going to say, I haven't done it yet. Otherwise, he would have rung me. You know, I didn't want to push it. Every year, my wife occasionally, if I've spent something, on something that I shouldn't have done, or if I overspent on something, she would bring up the fact that I gave 50 quid to this chap who just left with my money.
Mm-hmm.
And in the back of my mind, I was thinking, I hope he's using it or used it to his advantage. Anyway, I get a call a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of speak to Malcolm Charles. I say, yeah, speaking. Oh, I'm so embarrassed. For months, I wanted to call you and talk to you because you sent me £50 5 years ago to build this thing. And I want to call you and to tell you I have completed it. I've done it. It's going to be 3D printed in resin. I will send it to you once it's complete. And I was completely blown away. I basically got this really, really cool thing that is going to retail for about £48. Made because I wanted it, and I got it for 50 quid.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, it's worked out well if you can prepare to wait. So maybe when the guy said, can you make me a model? Oh, yeah, it's going to cost you £500. You say, well, what if it took you 5 years?
That, to be honest, my biggest problem. I was petrified because she was actually quite adamant that she had to pay for something for it because of the work I'd done. And I'd done more than what she'd asked me to do.
Good.
And because we're work colleagues, you know, we talked about it quite a lot. So the communication was there, but I was constantly worried about the fact that I'd promised to do something and I had to deliver on it, and I had to deliver it in a way in which I was happy with and that they would be happy with.
Well, you had some vested interest in that because you were friends or colleagues with them.
Well, that's true. You know, someone asked me to do a commission build. I said previously that, you know, well, why wouldn't you pay the money up front? Nothing wrong with that. No reason to ask for that. But if I had 50 quid or 500 quid from someone, I'd be absolutely scared to death about the fact that I got this money and I was got to do this work, and the pressure, just the sheer pressure of doing it would drive me insane.
Really?
I think it would, yeah. I mean, I'd love, don't get wrong, if someone said to me, oh, I really liked how you did that model, can you recreate it? I'd probably say, no, I'll see what I've done.
Yeah.
The thought of having to recreate something or do something to a particular person's needs doesn't thrill me with desire. And I'll equate this a bit further. Is a good 2 years now, I can't remember how long ago, it might have even been 10 years ago, when I was at a model show with my father, or a train show, well, my father, he made comment to me about the fact he'd read in the Steam Engine Now.
Steam Engine Now. I love that
magazine. That they got this really funky thing going on called weathering.
Ooh.
And I was like, oh, yeah, we've been doing that for years, Dad. And he's like, yeah, but these people are paying 150 quid for someone to weather their loco.
Yes.
And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, you could make a killing. I was like, possibly.
Yes, that's right.
But I don't want to weather someone else's wagon, thanks. It's not really my thing.
There's an analogy.
Read into it what you want by that comment. But anyway, yeah, he's right. I mean, now, looking at it, I was a fool because there wasn't many people doing it, and it was a real hot thing, a hot potato. And I could have probably made a reasonable amount of money on the side doing it. But
I wonder then if in the model railroad hobby, there are people who just want to have the models of trains working and they just want to drive them around. They're not interested in creating.
Oh, yeah, no, there is, definitely. We have spoken about this before, but, you know, there's a lot of associations where you go and play with your model trains, and it's more about the timekeeping and the signaller and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just watching something go round and round in circles. And that,
I understand, yeah.
In a way, fascinates me that someone would want to, you know, you look at the shows, for example, you go to a show and you've got Clapham Junction. I don't know. Random sort of thing, but
you're assuming that I've been to a model railway show.
Well, no, you've got a junction or a terminus as a layout.
You do know that I don't know what a terminus is, and I don't work with trains.
A terminus is where a train stops and finishes its journey. It's the end of the line.
Why just say that then?
Okay, so the end of the line, whatever.
Okay.
Just to make it a little bit easier for Malcolm, you've got a layout of Paddington Station.
Okay.
You've got a group of 9 people behind this amazing display of Paddington Station and constant going and touring and going of trains. But what you don't see necessarily is the clipboard behind the display, which is the time of the trains must depart, the time of when they must arrive, how long they're there for, and what gets decarriaged and recarriaged. And these are all wrong terminologies, and I apologize for anyone that's into that thing listening.
I understand decarriaged and uncarriaged. I understand.
There's a physical timetable.
Oh, yeah.
And I've literally been at a show where I've seen people lose their temper because the trains are late. The train's late. Why didn't you couple that up quicker? The whole system's knackered.
Yeah, Jeff, you do this every time.
Yeah. Buy a bloody watch, will you, for Christ's sake, Jeff? Definitely, there is a market for people to, I've bought this £500 loco. Can you please weather it up?
Yeah. One of my friends that I've made recently, he works in a model shop. There's a guy there and he said, oh, you know, this looks lovely. I need to weather it up, though. And the guy went, oh, it's very easy. Just use your oils and da-da-da-da. And he said, oh, would you do it for me? I think he missed a trick and he didn't charge him. But he made a bloody good job on this loco. He weathered that chap for free. that we know that we was telling the story in a group of us. Everyone else was saying you should have charged some money for that, you know. But maybe it would change, like you said, maybe it would change his enjoyment of doing it. Or he had to make it really, really good, because if he's not charging for it,
yeah, it becomes a business.
There you go. Yeah.
Because there's a value of your work. If the customer's not happy with what you've done, you're then into refund territory and all that sort of stuff, aren't you?
Yeah, and he did enjoy weathering this locomotive up for the guy, and has got a kind of a larger heart for doing it for free for him, which you can't buy, can you?
No.
It's interesting. We're talking about all these things, we've kind of gone on lots of tangents, but it's still about modelling related, so I'm not upset. It's okay. Another question I've had on my list here that I made is, oh, I haven't got the patience or the pig-tit fingers to make that.
Well, if they've got pig-tit fingers, then they're in with a shout of being out of make models, because most of us got pig-tit fingers. And yeah. being able to say that phrase in succession like that in such a short space of time is quite unheard of. So thank you for that.
Are we allowed to say pig-tit fingers, yeah, considering our last episode?
Well, that's not offending any gender, is it? Might have for pigs. So if any pigs listening, I apologise for that.
Any pigs listening, fuck you pigs.
I will sit in my hovel and think what I've done. So I apologise. That does always amaze me, that comment of, oh, I don't think I've got the patience for that. Well, have you tried? Well, no, I haven't. Well, how would you know?
Yeah, to assume that you haven't got the patience, you haven't got the dexterity to do something, is quite defeatist, isn't it? I don't know if that's a compliment again or what.
I think it's an aberrational compliment, without a doubt, because it's a case of, oh, I couldn't sit there for 3 months and 5 days and all those hours, you know, making something that's worth 550 quid to sell.
Yeah, I haven't got the patience to do all that.
Again, it's another one of those question stroke statements, which is, well, here's a conversation here.
Yeah.
Have you tried it? What stops you from trying it? You know, and we should engage with people and ask those questions when we're asked these questions, to sort of say to them, well, you never know. Well, actually, it's a phrase I quite often use. Oh, I haven't got the patience for that. And I use that with my father a lot. My dad always says to me, have you taken the time and trouble to try? Because if you have tried and you failed, okay, maybe you haven't got the patience. But if you tried and got close to it, a little bit more patience and you'll get closer to it again, won't you?
Yeah.
And that's the thing with the frequently asked questions, really, is they are statements that are trying to open up a conversation to a point, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
But they are quite closed statements in themselves.
Yeah. They ask for a number or a yes or no question. That's why I like to ask why you made it. Why are you showing it?
Yeah.
Because you can't just say yes. That's why.
Because I can. And move on.
Yeah. Because I can.
Move on. I've got other questions to answer, you know.
I've got all these. I've got to find out how long all these models took.
Yeah, but what do you do? Again, what do you do with that information? You know, if you ask the question, what do you do with that information? Do you go home talking to your friends and going, oh, do you know what? I looked at a model yesterday at a model show. Oh, no, so I saw it. I went to the Phaetons. They were showing models, and I asked the guy how long it took. And do you know, he told me, you wouldn't repeat it, would you? Let's be honest.
No, you wouldn't. No. Do you know what he said? Guess how long he said. Guess how long. I don't know. Go on, guess. How long? A day. A day? No, go on, guess.
Yeah. I might try that at work tomorrow, actually. I might show them a picture of a model and say to them, look, how many years do you think that person's been doing that?
I reckon they would revel in that conversation.
Oh, they would, yes. I can see it now, me being told to leave the office.
Yeah.
Brilliant. I won't have to work so hard.
Yep.
But anyway.
But yeah, not having the patience for something is it certainly is an opener to have a conversation with them to say, well, neither have I. I haven't got the patience to do modelling.
No.
I haven't got the patience at all, and it is a constant struggle just to go, yeah, that'll do. Where's the next cool thing I've got on my shelf? It's a constant fight, and I wish I had better patience. I wish I was able to concentrate on something much longer than I can. And then maybe that's what the conversation needs to be about when someone asks you that, or tells you that they don't have the patience, or maybe the confidence, or the dexterity.
Dexterity is a really good one, actually. There is a lot of questions where it comes to a physical barrier, isn't there? Often you get that. Oh, I wouldn't be able to see such small parts, or to use the phrase, pig tits, would get in the way of being able to hold those bits of model together and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But it's the same. It's the same sort of answer, really. It's a case of, well, have you tried? I was talking to one of my customers a couple of days ago, funny enough, who whose husband's been involved in a quite nasty accident.
Oh dear.
Which is devastating in itself. But anyway, I won't go into too much details because it's private to them. But we were talking about dexterity and the fact that he has a problem with one of his arms and hands. He's been injured in a way in which he's now got a problem with his arm. Didn't have that before.
Right.
So we were talking about bits and pieces, and I said to her, does your husband like model making at all? And she said, oh, no, I don't think he's got the patience for that or the dexterity. And I said, okay, so he's going to have to go through therapy to get his hand and arm working, isn't he? Oh, yes, she said, yes. And I said, well, all that is just repetitive something to get it back to where it would be. Mm-hmm. So I've given her today a model kit. It's a quick build. It's a quick build.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a little Lego-ish.
Yeah.
It's all pre-painted, so there's no glue involved or anything like that.
It's got stickers.
But I've given it to her, and I've said to her, take that, give it to him, try your best, give it a go. And the great thing is if he manages to put it all together, you can go in there and take it all apart and tell him to do it again.
That's right. Well done you. That's brilliant.
And with any luck, he isn't a modeler by any means, but with any luck, that will help him with his recovery, which is a great thing to do, a great thing to happen for him. But hopefully, maybe that will be a positive for him to come out of this event and this part of his journey and suddenly become a model maker.
It'll be all about the mindset that he has.
Yeah.
And whether he's able to deal with that frustration and relearning things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Won't it? And that'll be a journey on itself, not alone just rebuilding your nerve endings, but actually getting over the fact that your life's now changed slightly. Or hugely. Well done you. That's really good. Yeah, I encourage everyone to do that.
There were lots of – this will sound a bit silly after what I've just said, but there are lots of ways to introduce people to model making, and there are lots of reasons for them to try model making.
Are you saying just hang around a hospital?
So if you find an opportunity – yeah, I wouldn't advise hanging around hospitals. Security is quite hot in hospitals. You might find yourself in the back of a van somewhere in not a pleasant experience. But
hanging around A&E with a long coat on, with 170 seconds on one side.
I've got some 70 seconds on this side and 156 in this side. Do you fancy one?
Yeah, what do you reckon to these? Oh, my God.
We've gone well off the track, sorry.
That's all right. The other questions I've got. Oh, my granddad made models like these. Well, my dad has loads of models in his house and he never gets the time to make them. Or I used to make models when I was a kid and I have models at home that I've not got time to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ex-modelers or families are ex-modelers. That's very common.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever come across those, but it's always that huge kind of green light to say, well, why not get back into that hobby?
Yeah.
Why not go and get that kit and finish it off? Mm-hmm. And then you can come and sit on this side of the table.
I can ask you how long it took you to make.
That's right. And you will be able to eat the hobnobs that we've brought on this side of the table.
Yes.
But it is a sad thing when, you know, you really want to get them to carry it on, don't you? To push forward with it. So, yeah.
What a great way to remember your granddad if he used to make models. Why don't you build one?
Yeah, I've had that a lot actually before where people have said, you know, they've lost somebody and they've got their model and it's half built and they'll finish it off as a sort of something commemorative.
And that's always quite daunting for someone that's not a model maker. They want to create something that would make their loved one proud. Mm-hmm. And let's be honest, quite often someone coming into the hobby for that would have to start by not touching that and doing something completely different.
Yeah, that's right.
To learn some of the skills and stuff.
Absolutely.
But again, all of these questions so far, they're all got a common thread, haven't they, really? And that common thread is the fact that they're trying to create a connection. How amazing is that, that a little bit of plastic is a source of wanting to make connections, to make interactions?
Yeah. They see something and then think, oh, that sparks something in my memory, or that's even if it's positive or negative. So, yeah, have more conversations, people.
Mm.
Obviously, if you go to model shows and things like that and you want to chat to your mates, then it's fine. But if someone is stupid enough to stop in front of me, they get talked mm-hmm. to. Whether they like it or not, I will say hello because they've, you know, they've stopped to look at something. Whether it's not my model or not, if they're looking at someone else, it's fine. But I'll still say hello. How are you having a good show? How long did it take you to get dressed in the morning? How much is that jacket?
I love the lippy you got on.
Yeah, but you're right. The people are trying to find a connection, aren't they? They want to have a conversation. So engage in that conversation. Answer the question that you've asked, but then just go on from there.
And just remember, even though you've heard that question for the 19th, 20th, 30th, 40th time, it's still the same thing. It's still the first connection. It's still the first opportunity to have an evolution of conversation. Look at me with my big words. Woohoo! I'm swallowing dictionaries day by day.
Say that again. You're swallowing what?
I'm swallowing dictionaries.
Oh.
Day by day. Well, I'm actually doing it letter by letter, if I'm honest. So I've just gone past the E's. And I'm coming off the E's now and I'm moving on to the next one.
Start with the A's, get down to the Z's.
As long as I don't get onto the Theosaurus, we'll be okay.
I like that. A nice little chat. If you've got any other ideas of what we could talk about or any subjects that you want to approach, or if you just want to ask how long it take me to edit this podcast, then get in touch. We'll have a good old chat with you.
And don't forget, of course, Telford is coming up soon and the wonderful show
Scale Model World.
That is the UK's best show in many modelers' opinion. This year, of course, we've got the Walnut Challenge group build that we've put out to all of the members of IPMS. The award is busy printing behind me as I speak. I can't say much more than that.
God, you say you drip feed. There's little bits of nuggets of information for me, don't you? I didn't even know that. You're printing the award.
Ah, there you go. See?
How long did that take you to print?
I've actually got three elves out there carving other stuff as well to do with it. So, yes, it's a full production line for one particular trophy. But if you'd like to have the Nuts Award trophy, make sure your nuts are out on the table. In fairness, we've actually been approached by other people, listeners to this fine podcast, wondering if we'd like them to send their nuts to us.
Yeah.
And that's a quite a proud moment to know that someone's willing to share the nuts, feels that we'll look after them for them.
I've said that's absolutely fine. Yeah, please do send. If someone sends me their nuts in the post, I will proudly display them somewhere on somebody's table at Telford, and it will be part of the map.
Yeah, it will be.
If you want to do that, if you're not going to be at Telford, then get in touch and we'll sort something out.
But also the other thing to think about as well, which I haven't said this to Malcolm, but I'm going to throw it out there anyway, is IPMS, the society itself, the people at the top are well behind this challenge. They've given us permission to do it, to challenge all the special interest groups to get the nuts on the table. You know what? If we were swamped with nuts, I'm sure we probably could find a table somewhere in the hall to display them all in one go. And the last thing on that, obviously, the Walnut Group Challenge build is this year's project. If you have any ideas for next year's project, some zany ideas or thoughts along those lines, drop us an email, drop us some thoughts, and we're sure to embrace something completely off the wall. But yeah, get involved, people. As always, thank you for your help. The other thing I want to mention as well is that, as we have alluded to earlier in this broadcast, is that we enjoyed the interview so much. That we have got a few more coming up at some point. So we're busy organising those. We're going to be really proud to bring them together because we were very nervous about doing it to start with. We will carry on doing what we're doing in the way we do it, but we will throw in some odd interviews and bits and pieces because bit of room for expansion.
Yeah, maybe. I think certainly there's some people that I would just like to sit down and chat with that have either influenced me or have changed the path of my hobby or have done something that I'm fascinated with, or of just incredibly talented people that I just want to find out how long it took them to make their models.
The first question, how long did it take you to make your models? If I wanted that as a commission build, how much would that cost me?
Cool. Okay. We need to do a Moosaroo update.
Oh, God, yes.
Moosaroo Cup. The Moosaroo Cup. Let's talk about the Moosaroo Cup. Boom.
Woohoo! So, Malcolm, what's the news? What's going on?
Okay. So, update on the Moosaroo Challenge. All the podcasts have been charged by IPMS Hamilton to build the Armour Hobby Mustang with the P51B. To choose one of the liveries on the back, on the decal options, build it to the best ability, and then there will be a competition in March in Canada.
There is, yeah.
And we've been asked to do one as well. So I've taken the short straw on this one and storing a kit on my shelf until I have. I'm storing it very well. It's flat. It's possibly got a tiny bit of dust on the top now, but that is the progress that I've made. I've done plenty of research, and I would like to talk to you about what exactly I've chosen and why, but I might save that for another episode. I think there's quite a lot of legs in that one, so I have a good old chat about it rather than just dropping it in a quick update. But yeah, I haven't started it. I will start it in the future. I've got a model I'm working on, nearly finished, and I've got another model to squeeze in then, and then I will start it. I've been watching other podcasts doing theirs as well, and they've done some amazing work. So I'm quite happy that they've ploughed the field for me, so I can just sort of follow along the tunnel and dodge all the pitfalls that they've had. Not that they've had any. Everyone's screaming and shouting about how great this kit is. But yeah, I'm building other kits at the moment. So that's not much of an update, is it? Pretty much.
Luckily, it's very similar to what happened last year when I did it. So I'm enjoying these updates.
Yeah, there you go. That's the update. Nothing to update. But what I am working on is the Testers 148 Blackbird, and that's nearly done. Mm-hmm. Nearly there. Had nightmare with the decals. They have just fallen apart. They are going to be faded right back. So I get away with it. And if I don't tell anyone, I don't think anyone would notice.
No. Well, no one listens to this. No one will know.
No, that's true. Well, two people do.
Oh, well, okay.
I would have liked to have had the control over the decals if, you know, a new set would have afforded me.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's going to be hanging up in a shop on the ceiling, I wasn't too bothered.
Mm-hmm.
I just did my best with what I had.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely airplane. I was just saying before the show, I also have the Revel Blackbird that I got for my birthday. It was mm-hmm. a massive song and dance about last year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been sat on the shelf unopened, still sealed. Sat there waiting to go. And now I've nearly finished this Blackbird. I don't really want to build the other one. I'm not interested now. I've done it. Yeah, so if you see a Revel Blackbird on eBay soon, it might be mine.
I think, to be honest, you'll want to do it. You'll go off on a tangent on something else, and then you'll eventually go back and go, do you know what, actually, I want to build it with decals that don't fall apart.
Maybe, but I don't know, because I've kind of scratched that itch. You know, I love the aircraft. I love the FR-71. I love the whole, you know, all the stories about the speed and everything and its development and the secrecy surrounding it and everything like that. Love it. But now I've built it. I've kind of exercised that demon that was in mm-hmm. me, and it's done and it's out and it exists, and now I can move on to something else. That's interesting, isn't it? Exercising a demon.
Mm, a lot of different phrases there that are quite worrying, to be honest, but yeah.
I've done a lot of therapy over the years, so. but no, I think I might actually sell it and get something else.
Oh wow! Now I'm shocked by that.
Yeah, but well, you know, I've built one. I probably wouldn't feel the same way if I hadn't built this. I would definitely be waiting to build the Blackbird. But
I'll be honest with you: if you sold that, I think you would. It would be one of those things that you would rebuy.
We'll see.
I'd be surprised if you didn't.
Well, if you buy it off me, then you just give it back to me.
Well, that's true, yeah.
Is that fair?
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Good. Don't do the maths on it. It's sound. What about you? What are you doing? What's your bench update? What's going on with you? What have you got growing? What's growing on your desk?
Really bad, to be honest. The K2 is still in parts. We've got to the point where I'm going to do a bit of oil work on it and then finally put it together.
What's that for? Is that a group build or is it a...
Well, I suppose it is a group build. It was a Facebook group honour thy service was the hashtag.
Oh, sorry. K2 ambulance, not the K2 tank, the Russian one. Gotcha. You didn't mention it, you said the K2.
No, K2 ambulance, yes, definitely. No, sorry, yes. So the Airfix 135th K2 ambulance, Austin K2 ambulance. Yeah, so all the module parts are done. The body of the ambulance is three quarters put together. But like I said, I want to do a bit of oil work before I put it all together and then put it onto its onto the actual running gear, if you like. Phrase you use, what on earth is that? Anyway, it doesn't matter. So yeah, so it's almost there. And I think, to be honest, it will definitely be done by the end of this month. So it'll be quicker than that, but I'm giving myself a bit of leeway. The Helldiver is now primed. How unfortunately it has shown me a lot of problems with seams and all that sort of stuff. So a lot of sanding and fillering going on right now. It's all right, I've got another lung. That's coming along a little bit. I have got some 3D printed dragons that I've done for a friend. He's asked me to test some resin, which I said I would.
How long did it take you to print that?
Not that long. It's going to take me a lot longer to paint it, though. So what I did was, when I printed them, I had one that failed. And the only way I describe it is basically it's ended up looking like a gremlin. So the pointy ears.
Yeah.
Whereas,
oh, like Spike?
Yeah.
Stripe. Is it Stripe? Spike?
I don't know.
No, you know, the Gremlins, the film.
I don't know.
Was it Stripe or Spike?
I don't know.
The main...
You're going to Google it, aren't you?
Baddie from Gremlin. It's called Stripe. There we go. Carry on.
So, yeah, it's got a gremlin look to it. And then, obviously, the other one that same figure that I did printed properly. So I contacted my friend who's asked me to test his resin and said, would you... Because I'm going to send them back to him, because that was the purpose. Would you like me to paint one? So, yeah, he said yes. So I've I primed it. I'm showing Malcolm now.
Oh, yeah. I see it's primed.
I primed it.
Yeah.
I managed to get a hold of some paints that I wanted to test, which are not the normal paints, acrylic paints. And I painted it, and now I've stripped it right back because the paint was awful.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, that's why it's not modelling paint. It's something else. But anyway, right. So that's got to be reprimed. So that's on the bench as well. I've got the Spitfire from the Black Rifle community. Black Rifle Works community group build.
It's a long name, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
International Plastic Model Society affiliated.
Indeed, yes. That's ready for primer. Yeah, that's about it all on my bench. There's lots of stuff on the bench, but not a lot of progress, unfortunately. But, newsflash, that corner has now changed. It's now beautiful. It's no longer the pit of the room. And I choose my words really well there. That's been tidied up. I've got a little bit more work to do, and that's why I have not been doing much modelling. Is I've actually got a box of stuff in which I've got to now decide what I'm doing with, because it can't fit in the room anymore. And in fairness, all the stuff in that box is stuff that I probably haven't touched for 15 years and I really need to find a new home for it. Yeah, so of course there is the challenge from the Micro Machines podcast in relation to the T26E4 Persian Pilot. Yes, I've accepted the challenge. I've just joined your group today, funny enough. And I will be looking up the Battle of the Bulge group build. In fact, it's right in front of me as I'm talking to you. So I'm going to be checking that out and what the rules are and where I need postings and all that sort of stuff. I'm going to do that today. So thank you for the invitation. Very, very grateful to be invited somewhere.
Questions about your work are always a welcome sign of the interest or inspiration you have created from your work. We should never tire them or the interaction that is formed from them.
Advocating for building models for those that have not tried, it is how we push the hobby to grow. Biting our lip and not rolling our eyes at the repetitive questions would be counterproductive. Instead, smile, answer politely, and then record a podcast to bitch about it.
Next time, we'll be just making conversation about... I'll say that again because I was moving on my chair and it was squeaky. You hear that?
Mm-hmm.
Next time, we'll be just making conversation about the other subjects that relate to this daft hobby of ours. Like squeaky chairs.
Mm.
Squeaky chairs, do you have one? Let's discuss it for 80 minutes.